Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Hey there, before we get started on today's episode, if you are listening to this before June 15th, 2017, June 15th is the first early bird deadline for the Global Workspace Association conference in Miami, Florida. Ticket prices go up after that date, so if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, roll on over to conference.globalworkspace.org and order your tickets. When you go through the registration process, you'll book your hotel room at the same time. We have an amazing lineup and a great agenda. We are focusing on helping people understand fundraising. So we're doing a theme around meet the money and corporate co-working, how to attract and serve corporate co-working users as that segment grows, and the overall future of the industry, different business models, the member experience. And we're doing a couple of interesting new things this year around some education opportunities for operators and for corporate real estate decision makers. If you are a corporate real estate decision maker, we are offering a corporate mobility certification. We're super excited about what this looks like. So if you want more details on that, email me at jamie@everythingcoworking.com. But get on over to conference.globalworkspace.org and get your tickets before our pricing goes up. Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 54. I am recording this the day after Memorial Day, and I am super sore. So those of you who know me well know that I do CrossFit and I'm somewhat obsessed with it. And the big CrossFit workout to do on Memorial Day is called Murph, which honors a soldier who gave his life to our country. And CrossFit gyms around the country do this workout on Memorial Day. It is 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, and 300 air squats. Sorry. And first you start with a mile run, then you do the pull-ups, the push-ups, the air squats, and then you finish it with another mile run. And if you do it as prescribed, RX, as they say in the CrossFit world, you wear a 20-pound vest. So I'd never done it with a 20-pound vest before, and yesterday was my first time, and I can barely walk today. So I'm saying this partly to whine a little bit, and partly because it's aligned with the theme I want to talk about today, which is that part of the reason I do it is because there's nothing better than doing something really hard with other people. The community aspect of a shared pain, in a good way, of course, with CrossFit, has a huge impact. It's like uncomfortable and yet so fulfilling at the same time. And, you know, on the last run, so the last mile, that second run is much slower than the first run. You know, you're high-fiving everyone when you run by. Everyone's cheering each other on because you really don't want to be doing that run, but you're going to finish it. And everybody's going to finish it and support each other. And it's an amazing feeling. And it's all about doing it together. So that's what I want to talk about today. So I was at an event. It's called the SF Registry event. It's a series of real estate related events in San Francisco. And I was on a panel last week on workplace technology. And interestingly, even though the panel was on technology, the panel members were really focused on talking about sort of user-centered design and making the experience in a building focused on the end user and technology that supports that, of course. So the panel members were Mark Gilbreth from Liquid Space, Lindsay Baker with Comfy, which helps to regulate temperature in buildings and make everybody comfortable, which is one of the most impossible things to do. And then Nigel, who's the head of engineering for WeWork, and myself. And we had a great panel and talked about a lot of different things. At some point during the panel discussion, I made a comment about the rising epidemic of loneliness and how, aside from the many tangible benefits of the Work From Anywhere movement, one of the important issues it's addressing is getting people out of their lonely home offices and into social situations where they can thrive. Human beings are inherently social creatures, and that is at the root of why shared workspaces have been on a growth bend for the last 10 years. So after the panel ended, a few people from the audience came up and mentioned how important it was in their world that I had addressed this topic. And they talked about how people just want to be seen, and that when you work from home, sometimes no one sees you all day. No one asks you, you know, how you're doing. No one compliments your shoes. One woman even asked me for some research on loneliness to contribute to the case she's making to her management to get their teams out of their home offices. So I thought I would just spend a little bit of time talking about this topic, because at the root of what we do, it's about getting people out of their home offices and into being social. So today, at the same time that there's an app for just about anything you need to get delivered to your home, Postmates, Grubhub, creating this emphasis on independence and freeing us from, well, talking to other humans, online social interactions have literally exploded. 1.6 billion people are on Facebook each month. 300 million people are on Twitter. 500 million are on Instagram. 300 million on Pinterest. Millions of people on Snapchat, which I have yet to figure out, by the way. So we're all getting more social, just in a different way, right? So why is it that studies are showing that loneliness is on the rise? It's actually on the verge of becoming an epidemic. And the risks of chronic loneliness are on par with obesity. Can you, that one shocked me. So I started doing some research on loneliness because I started to get just really into this topic. And there's a lot of research out there. And one of the posits that the researcher makes is that the risks of chronic loneliness are on par with obesity. That's a pretty big deal in today's day and age, where obesity is also a big deal. Chronic loneliness is associated with increased levels of cortisol, a major stress hormone, as well as higher vascular resistance, which can raise blood pressure and decrease blood flow to vital organs. So while we may traditionally think of loneliness as afflicting the elderly who've resigned to living alone with limited ability to get out of the house and with families who are too busy to visit them, this is no longer the case. Loneliness is in the room with each of us. So despite the ubiquity of social media, more than half of us report feeling lonely, which means lacking meaningful social interactions. And I think that's the key word, meaningful social interactions. And here's what's worse. Being lonely can make you, well, socially challenging, which causes a bit of a vicious cycle. Have you ever noticed that a friend that started working from home, you'd go out to drinks with her and she doesn't have much to talk about? Well, a researcher out of the University of Chicago who studies loneliness has found that loneliness results in increased negativity, depressive thinking, heightened sensitivity to social threats, and trouble with impulse control. As a result, lonely people are impaired in their ability to control their emotions, make decisions, and interact with people. Ironically, the lonelier people are, the less well they function with others. So how important is being in community to our health and well-being? So some of you may have heard about the Blue Zone studies. Some of you may not. I tend to think they're much more widely read than they actually are. So this guy named Dan Butner, and I'm not totally sure I'm saying his name right, teamed up with National Geographic to find the world's longest-lived people and study them. So he wanted to go around the world and figure out where are the populations that live the longest, and he wanted to figure out why they live so long. So the research yielded a list of 9 factors, which had some things on it that you'd expect, like eating well. But one of them is having the right tribe. The world's longest-lived people chose or were born into social circles that supported healthy behaviors. So research shows that smoking, obesity, happiness, and even loneliness are contagious. So the social networks of long-lived people have favorably shaped their health behaviors, which makes sense. So let's talk about what is community and what is not. Drinking a mocha frappuccino next to someone at Starbucks is not. Waiting in line with someone at the grocery store is not. Sweating next to someone on a treadmill is not. saying hey to the UPS man when he delivers your 16th Amazon Prime box of the week is also not. The Wikipedia definition of community is a feeling of fellowship with others as a result of sharing common attitudes, interests, and goals. A feeling of fellowship, what is that? It's the opposite of feeling lonely in the sense that you are not alone on the roller coaster of life. And not that you are not just alone, but the people actually get you. And they're there to high-five you when you land a new client, and they bring in the voodoo dolls when the clients turn evil, and they know the name of your kids and how much you love your mini golden doodle. I have two of them, by the way. The other part of the definition is common attitudes, interests, and goals. So this can be in business or it can be in other aspects of your life. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I get this from my CrossFit box. Our common attitudes and interests are in getting stronger in a group class setting and having some fun throwing some weights around. And while we do this, it doesn't matter how much we're lifting or how fast we're going. The important thing is that we have a connection with the person next to us. And how important are these connections? Research on the subject of belonging indicate that they are a matter of life and death. It's a big deal. So you're either sitting there feeling like getting a little dramatic over something non-medical like loneliness, or maybe I've struck a nerve because you know what it feels like to be missing those connections and that sense of belonging. And you can see the physical connection. Dr. Kenneth Pelletier of the Stanford Center for Research and Disease Prevention asserts that the sense of belonging appears to be a basic human need, as basic as food and shelter. In fact, social support may be one of the critical elements distinguishing those who remain healthy from those who become ill. Another group of researchers studied a group of 7,000 people over 9 years and concluded that the people with many social contacts, a spouse, a close-knit family, a network of friends, church, or other group affiliates, lived longer and had better health. And people who were socially isolated had poorer health and died earlier. In fact, those who had few ties with other people died at rates 2 to 5 times higher than those with good social ties. So this is a matter of life and death. And I will put the links to this research in the show notes. everythingcoworking.com/54. So these researchers write that social support is the degree to which a person's basic social needs are met through interaction with other people. It's the resources, both tangible and intangible, that other people provide. It's a person's perception that he or she can count on other people to help with a problem, for help in times of crisis. In times of crisis, who do we usually have on speed dial for times of crisis? The fast answer, and probably the most common answer for all of history, has been a family member, mom, dad, brother, sister. Revisiting the Blue Zone study, one of the key contributors to longevity is putting loved ones first. Successful centenarians, which are people who live to be 100, in the Blue Zones put their families first. This means keeping aging parents and grandparents nearby or in the home. It lowers disease and mortality rates of children in the home too. They commit to a life partner, which can add up to 3 years of life expectancy, and invest in their children with time and love, which means your children will be more likely to care for you when the time comes. But the family unit is no longer committed to the same zip code. Do you have a family member within an hour of where you live? I bet a lot of you do not. I do not. The nature of the world has changed. We move away from family. We follow a job. A lover. We depart for greener pastures. In my case, warmer weather and more economic opportunity and diversity. What kind of impact does that have on our sense of belonging? Shortly after my family moved to the Bay Area, after 15 years in Chicago, I recall texting with my best friend Gina, who lives in Milwaukee. She told me she'd had severe stomach pain and had to go to the hospital in the middle of the night. Because she has two small kids that couldn't easily be packed up and put back to sleep in the ER, her friend Amy came and took her. This text exchange caused a moment of panic for me. There was not one single person I could call to take me to the hospital in the middle of the night. I mean, there was 911. There were unlikely candidates like my dog walker and a couple of other really awkward options. My closest family member was a sister-in-law who lived 1,200 miles away in Highlands Ranch, Colorado. She has three small children, and until recently, no family closer than St. Louis, Missouri. Today, many of us cannot rely on our family members. We have to cultivate other communities. How do we do this? How do we get out there and ignite connections that give us a sense of belonging to protect us from loneliness and give us someone to put on speed dial in case of an emergency? Some of us are more natural at getting into community. We join book clubs, running clubs, church groups, the PTA. We volunteer to coach our kids' soccer team. We host the Friday night poker game. And others are not as naturally inclined. Maybe we're introverts. And leading the local Boy Scout troop or being the room mom at school is just way out of our comfort zone and totally energy zapping for us. So we stay at home in our comfy cocoon at risk to the dangers of not finding our tribe. Either way, one of the most fascinating things I've found from running a co-working space is that community can be created for extroverts, introverts, and anyone in between. In fact, co-working has figured out that community is so important that there's an entire role dedicated to community management. So let me share a few stories of the dramatic impact that community has had in a co-working space. So there's Mike. He attends a technology trade show and has a cardiac event. His doctor tells him he needs to lose weight or he'll die. So he joins a co-working space, loses 70 pounds, gets a dog, meets a girl with a dog, moves to the suburbs to enjoy his new health and his new life. Mike found a tribe with the habits he wanted and it changed his life. Kathy was struggling through a down economy and a rocky marriage. She joined a co-working space. She ended up getting divorced and struggled with depression. She called the owner of the co-working space one Saturday and asked to be let in because she was in a bad mental place and her co-working space was her happy place. Then there's Jane, who dated a lot but couldn't find the one until her friends at her co-working space ditched work one afternoon to go see the new James Bond movie. She ended up getting a bite to eat afterwards with Brad. They dated for a year and now they're getting married in Belize. Then there's Amanda, who knew she needed to get out of her house, but avoided the added expense of joining a co-working space. She finally took the plunge. She recently wrote a summary of the benefits of joining, and she shared that the most meaningful benefit was that she made new friends that really get her. She said that was one of the biggest complaints for years, was that all of her friends who understood what she was trying to do lived in other cities. She saw them once, maybe twice a year at conferences. Or she'd have to book a plane ticket to hang out with them for a week. Now that she's part of a co-working space, she said she knows people in her local community who also get what it's like to run a business. She has a local support system that wasn't there before. So the purpose of today's podcast is to help you to think about what you're doing. If you're starting a co-working space or if you're involved in the industry in some other way, what you're doing will make an impact. As much as the University of Chicago MBA in me loves to talk about how to set up and run your business for financial stability, the root of what we're doing here is simply not just about profit per square foot. It's about people and getting people into community and helping people live longer.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.